Botany v. Health Alliance, 133652. Mr. Smith?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I am Mr. Smith, Gerald Smith, from the Smith Law Firm, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Kirsten Taylor-Novotny. What we have here is an appeal from the District Court order of summary judgment, whereby the Court held that the plaintiff, Ms. Novotny, was determined to be not to be a qualified individual with a disability because she was unable to perform the essential functions of her job. That was the primary ruling. What the case is about, we have a female employee suffering from multiple sclerosis, who, because of her medical condition, was frequently tardy in reporting to work. Ms. Novotny was classified as an exempt employee under the Fair Labor Standards Act. Although Ms. Novotny was frequently tardy over a period of 5 years, her employment record was clean. She had never received any adverse disciplinary actions until within a few days after she requested an ADA accommodation.
My understanding is their big concern was not so much that she was missing work, but the fact that she would be late and wouldn't give any notice about being late.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. That
and,
is their
and then the problem there is there's no evidence in the record that her medical condition caused her to have the inability to give notice that she would be late, or that to have her, that she had mental fatigue or forgetfulness, and that's why she didn't call in when she knew she'd be late.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. Our argument to that is, though, that there were other individuals who were also tardy, being late, who were not calling in as well, and they were not disciplined to the same level that at all that Ms. Novotny was.
I thought you were relying on only one person.
Well, we're relying on one comparable, Ms. Yeah. Welch, but we also know that the supervisor, Ms. Novotny's immediate supervisor, Fletcher, was also tardy 50 times in a 7-month time period and had not called in and was not disciplined as well.
Any of those comparators lie to the company?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Any of those comparators lie to the company?
Did any of those comparatives lie to the company?
Yep.
That I don't know, Your Honor.
But your client did. She falsified records.
No, Your Honor. We don't believe that my client did falsify any records. The allegations from the defendant that she falsified records deal with falsifying time records where she listed a time of her arrival at work versus then what they compared with the entrance badge scan. Now, her multiple sclerosis affects her mental capabilities, or at least her short-term memory, and creates a mental fatigue as well as physical fatigue. She had requested use in early March, using her badge scan, her entrance report, to try to ascertain when she actually did arrive so she could accurately report. She also requested that again in May. Both of those requests were denied, so therefore, she was going by best memory. Yes, could she have written down somewhere what her arrival time was?
All we have to know is whether the company had a basis for believing she lied. There was a basis, right?
The company had a basis of her self-reported time, comparing that to the badge scan report. Yes, Your Honor.
They did not have that with respect to the so-called comparators.
That's correct, Your Honor, because the other comparators were not required to self-report, and the other comparators did not have badge scan reports run for them, which is one of the issues that we have, is my client was treated differently than the comparators.
And you said that there was evidence in the record indicating that those other supervisors did not provide, or those comparators didn't provide notice that they were going to be late. There was specific evidence in the record on that?
My understanding was
there wasn't any evidence, specific evidence to show that.
The evidence that we have is when we asked during deposition, we asked Ms. Welch if she had been late and if she had called in. And she said, not all the time. And when we asked Ms. Fletcher, she avoided the answer altogether, where she said, I'm an exempt employee. I don't have to. We're allowed up to 2 hours of time to be late that they can make up. And that was another issue, is Ms. Welch was allowed to make up time, and my client
was not.
Well,
was she an exempt employee?
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Welch was an exempt, salaried exempt employee as well. Same job description, same duties, same responsibilities, same functions, hired approximately the same time as my client. So there was disparate treatment there.
Now, the other reasons Health Alliance offered were the failure to call providers, update the Medicare fee schedules, and to complete client contracts.
Yes, Your Honor. My client disputes those. My client says that she was calling providers. Now, they ran a telephone audit on her phone line that was used by the company or through the computer system. And my client stated, well, she made a number of those phone calls using her cell phone, her own personal phone, and those would not show up on the audit. As far as the failure to update the Medicare, my client stated that she was working on that as well. And she explained that a lot of times these providers will wait till the last minute because the Medicare comes out, the Medicare rates come out at the beginning of the year, and they wait until that time draws closer before they will actually provide a response or a contract on that particular matter. So my client says she was doing all of that. Now, she was not informed that she was delinquent in those particular matters until her notice of termination. Now, and it's... The thing that really upsets us is that she was rated in May. She received an evaluation report in May that said she was meeting the requirements. She was satisfactory. And then 2 months later, she's terminated for substandard performance that she had no clue that she was substandard in. All along, there's a... she had a history of standard or adequate performance. Was it superior? No, but it was satisfactory. And then each year, she does recognize that she was tardy, and that was annotated on each of her performance evaluation reports. But the tardiness issue, if it was such an issue, it should have been raised well before, days after she raised an ADA accommodation request.
But they had had her in several times to talk about her issues with tardiness.
Yes, ma'am, but they never issued any formal discipline until after she did the submitted her request for ADA accommodations.
And you have evidence, there's evidence in the record that a doctor or a medical professional said that her mental condition had some causal connection to the MS?
I'm sorry, say that again, Your Honor.
Was there an expert that said that her issues with forgetfulness were tied to her MS?
No, Your Honor, there's
nothing. You mentioned that a little earlier, that you thought it was her mental condition that, you know, kind of led to this problem with not reporting.
Yes, Your Honor.
I didn't see any evidence that had been provided.
No, one of the standard symptoms of multiple sclerosis is a physical tiredness or physical fatigue as well as mental fatigue. Now, our concern was, as we argued, Health Alliance is in the medical field. They have access to doctors. They're associated with Carl, which is a major hospital, and the clinics and the doctors. They have the capabilities of knowing and should have known what the symptoms for multiple sclerosis are, as well as my client. So therefore, the fatigue, the mental fatigue issue, even though my client did not specifically raise that, she said fatigue, and her physician said fatigue, that doesn't... There's no indication, or there's no reason why Health Alliance would not have known or should not have known that included a mental fatigue as well.
Would you like to save some time for a little
bit? Yes, Your Honor, I would.
All right.
Thank you.
Ms. Litzinger.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. I represent Health Alliance Medical Plans in this plaintiff's appeal from the entry of summary judgment in favor of my client as to each and every one of the claims that she presented to the court under the ADA, Title VII, and under the Family and Medical Leave Act. The court's discussion with plaintiff's counsel focused on the question of evidence. I'd like to focus my remarks today on what the record evidence establishes and what it does not. The record evidence establishes that beginning nearly the day of her first employment, her first date of employment with Health Alliance, in November of 2005, she started having problems abiding by the rules and expectations of her employers. Her immediate supervisor, Sherry Fletcher, who supervised her during the entirety of her employment, of Ms. Novotny's employment, had a meeting with her in May of 2006 to raise the issue of her failure to be present during normal working hours, her tardiness, the appointments that she was taking during the middle of the day, her early departures. She had another conversation with her again in December of 2006, and in each and every single employment evaluation that was performed, there was one in 2007, two in 2008, one in 2009, and one in 2010. Ms. Fletcher addresses this exact same utter and blatant disregard for what are totally reasonable rules of employment. This court has held time and again that an employee does not have the authority to determine their own schedule in an unpredictable and sporadic fashion. And that is only what Health Alliance sought, was some accountability from this employee. It's a little misleading to suggest that she was never subjected to disciplinary action prior to 2010. She began under a corrective action plan in October of 2007. This is before she submitted her first FMLA material indicating that she had multiple sclerosis, which occurred in the first half of 2008. That corrective action plan said that every single day when she showed up at work, she had to go to her boss's office or let her know that she was there. That was the degree of unreliability demonstrated to date, or to that time, until October of 2007. And the subsequent employment evaluations harken back to that corrective action and say you have to abide by these conditions. Then in 2010, things shifted a bit. At that time, Ms. Novotny had been working at home for just over a year, since December 2008. She had 3 days at home and 2 days in the office. It's true that in March, around about March 9th, Health Alliance received a handwritten note from Curtis Hayden, who was her treating physician, that said something about two and a half days, it was two hyphen one half, from the office. Health Alliance had never received any prior information. In each of the FMLA recertification forms, one submitted in 2008 was the initial, and then the 2009. So they had a meeting, and they said to her, what do you need from us? And that meeting was on March 19th. And she said, well, I'm suffering from fatigue. And they said, well, your FMLA recertification is coming around in May. Why don't you have Dr. Hayden address this issue that you've reported to us of fatigue? When you look at the 2010 medical recertification, it says nothing about any mental consequence of the disease, none. There's no evidence presented to the district court that either forgetfulness or short-term memory issues or mental fatigue are results of multiple sclerosis.
Well, what about counsel's argument that you're in the health business and somehow your people should have known that this forgetfulness was a symptom of or a consequence of multiple sclerosis?
Your Honor, my client's in the insurance business. They contract with providers to provide services to individuals who are insured through Health Alliance. There is absolutely no obligation under the ADA, and in fact it is contrary to the very tenets of the statute, that we make a generalized assessment about what condition consequences are to an individual. Employers are charged with the strict responsibility of assuring that their evaluation of the limitations and ability of an individual are just that, individualized. An employee who seeks accommodation must participate in that process. The failure to participate in that process to provide supporting medical evidence means, according to this court's prior rulings, that no failure to accommodate claim stands. And when they had conversations with her about her alleged fatigue, and in fact there were at least five, March, May 1st, May 7th, May 14th, May 25th, they had an ongoing conversation with her about what they could do to address the question of her fatigue, and nearly every single thing she suggested was about physical fatigue. She said it was hard to walk from the car to the office, so the human resources director, Lauren Schmidt, measured parking spaces and distance to her desk. They assigned her an administrative assistant so that she didn't have to get up and go to the mail room or to the supply room. They set up her computer so that she could batch print and limit the number of walking trips. They moved her weekly meeting with her supervisors the afternoons because she had more trouble in the morning. What I think it's important to focus on, Your Honor, is, Your Honors, is that when I asked Ms. Novotny under oath in her deposition what the limitations of her conditions were in 2010, she said she lacked get-up and go drive. That's it. That's not mental fatigue. That's not memory problems. I clarified, and I said, you mean like regular motivation? She said yes. I said, were there any other limitations that you suffered in 2010 as a result of your diagnosis or condition? She said, no, not that I recall. I also asked her, Your Honors, and I think this is important, did you put a post-it note in your office so that when you came in you would remember to notify your supervisor that you were there? No. Did you set an alarm on your phone or otherwise remind yourself that you had this daily obligation? No. And Your Honor is absolutely right. She lied. She lied not once. She lied a half a dozen or a dozen times over the course of the March 19th meeting, where Health Alliance sat down and said, we're going to work with you. We will accommodate you. We're going to work this process, and we need you to provide us some information. And then she lied. And the reason she lied is that she didn't like the fact that FMLA leave was unpaid. So she engaged in wage theft by misreporting her time. And this notion, as a final point, Your Honors, that the badge stand report was somehow a reasonable accommodation is ridiculous. What Health Alliance asked is, please notify us when you will be late. In advance. She understood that. She signed off on a half of a dozen pieces of paper, or acknowledged in her deposition receipt of those papers, that said, I understand that I have an obligation to proactively notify my manager when I was going to be late. She lived 15 minutes away from Health Alliance. She never picked up the phone once on her way to work and said, Sherry, I'm on my way. I'll be late.
What about the those two individuals that had tardy issues that counsel says are similar to his client?
Not remotely similar, Your Honor. In fact, Kirsten Taylor Novotny testified that part of the reason that she perceived her and Heather Wantland Welch were treated differently is because they had different supervisors. There's no evidence in the record that they had similar education, background, history, or other employment experience, and the evidence demonstrates that they had different supervisors. Also, it's important to note, in response to that question as well, that these other two individuals, Ms. Welch and Ms. Fletcher, there's no evidence in the record that they weren't calling in regularly, that they weren't keeping their supervisors happy with regard to their accountability to the organization. In fact,
in terms of when they were late.
When they were late, when they might be absent, there's no evidence. And in fact, Ms. Novotny admitted in the statement of in her response to our statement of undisputed facts, as she must, because she testified under oath, that she didn't know anybody else who had committed the same infractions that she did within the contracting and provider services department. Unless the court has any additional questions, that concludes my remarks for today.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Smith, how much time did you have? 1 minute, Mr. Smith.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. As we want to reemphasize the main issue, there was no disciplinary action until days after Novotny raised the ADA issue. We listed in our reply.
What about the corrective action plan?
That really wasn't a disciplinary issue, Your Honor.
It
was a plan where she was supposed to work on trying to be more proactive and not be tardy.
How is that not disciplinary?
It's not listed as part of the Health Alliance disciplinary policy as a disciplinary action. The Health Alliance disciplinary policy states that the first level is a verbal warning, the second is a written warning, the third is a final written warning, and the fourth is termination. Now, after she requested the ADA accommodation, within just a couple of days, is when the verbal warning was issued. 11 days later, the written warning was issued. On May 14th, she rejected the 2 half-day FMLA leave option because she would have lost 20% of her income. Her hands were tied. They wouldn't allow her. That's why we say she was being interfered with. And she received the final written warning.
How was she interfered with?
She did not have an option, Your Honor. They said either you take 2 1-half days of FMLA leave, which would have decreased her income by 20%, or you work. Well, she chose to work. It interfered with her FMLA use, because if she was going to be tardy 30 minutes, why should she lose half a day rather than 30 minutes? I see my time is completed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.